Actually, before we get started, I don't know if I'm being recorded right now. I guess it's okay if I am. But my name is Cammie Harris, so I will say that. And just a few little housekeeping items I'll mention before we get started in the actual presentation to go deep. I wanted to point out that I have a QR code here that has, it's a mentor's toolkit with all the information that I'm sharing today. And then I also created a mentor meeting guide. And that is something I really wanted to get to in the presentation. But there was so much information I was trying to distill, I finally just decided to make a lovely handout and give it to you instead of trying to include everything in 45 minutes. So that is there. And then I also wanted to mention, last year I taught a class on the science behind motivation that actually ties in really well to this class. So if you have access to that recording, or there's a similar information on my podcast, which is The Joyful Homeschool, and it's episode 18. So again, I didn't feel like I could put all the information in 45 minutes, but all of that information is really helpful. So I would encourage you to go check that out as well. If you feel like all your questions weren't answered here, or you want to go a little bit deeper, those are some extra resources. Okay, one other thing. Write my notes down here. A lot of the information that I am doing for this presentation comes from this book, and I'm doing a drawing for it. So some of you probably already came by my booth and put your name in for the drawing. But for those of you who didn't, I'm just going to pass around the little thing to fill out. And if you want to be considered for that book, I'm going to do the drawing right after this class by my booth, and then I'll come back to you. So anyway, so there's that. All these little things. And then one last other thing. Sorry for all the information. I am so passionate about mentoring. I have mentored lots of youth over the years. I now am a mentor trainer for other mentors for a company that I work for, and it's one of my passions, which I'm so excited about teaching today. But I also have spent a lot of my time coaching the last few years, and learning mindset, emotional regulation, and my current thing is nervous system regulation tools that have super blessed my life. And I want to share it with people. So because my next class is beginning February 16th, I just am sending this flyer around for anybody who's interested. I don't want you to feel any pressure, but if it calls to you and if you're interested, I just want you to be aware of it. It's the least expensive way to access the tools. I also do one-on-one mentoring or coaching, which is also really powerful, but if money is an issue, then this is a good way to access that. So I'm going to pass that around as well. So
I think you've already seen it. You probably have too, but
anyway, pass it around for whoever. Okay, now we will get started on the topic. So I want you to picture, this is really heavy. It's my heaviest book to put in here. It is really heavy. I want you to picture your homeschool experience like this backpack, okay? And it is full of all of the things that you are involved in every day. It's the laundry, it's the dishes, it's you worrying about your kids' future, it's wondering if they're doing enough, it's wondering if you're doing enough, it's the curriculum, it's the books, it's everything, okay? So I want you to think about it and ask yourself, is this backpack that's part of your homeschool experience, whose back is it on most of the time? Is it you carrying the weight of all of that on your back by yourself? Or especially, are your teens carrying any of that weight? Are they taking ownership of their education? And project the idea that carrying the weight of your education is a heavy, horrible thing. That's not what I'm saying. But when you're carrying it, and it should be, ideally somebody else's, it does feel heavy, right? When our youth are carrying it, it's good for them. It's going to help them grow, and it's helping them become all that God intended them to become, right? Okay. So we're going to talk today about three different mindsets or roles that we can play in our homeschool experience. And these are the enforcer, the protector, and the mentor mindset. Okay? And as we go through these, I want you to just be considering, which roles am I playing in my homeschool? And because we're human, the truth is we probably all will pop into these different roles at different times. If my button will work. Okay, so the first one is sort of a, if you know Stephen Covey and he talks about things in win-win, win-lose, lose-win terminology. It's kind of a win-lose paradigm where we are the ones controlling what is happening in our homeschool. We have really high expectations, but the teenager has hardly any say in what's happening. Okay, it feels safe on some level because we're in control, but imagine what it might feel like for the teenager. It sounds like, from our perspective, do it now, do it exactly this way, because I said so. And sometimes it can actually sound really sweet and still be the enforcer. That would be me. I'm not necessarily yelling and bossing people around, but I still like to control everything, okay? So it's reminders and checking and policing our children. Under it is fear. It's a fear that we're not doing enough, they're not doing enough, they're not going to be ready for their future as adults. I mentioned that I'm in a nervous system resilience certification course right now, so I always have to pop in things about the nervous system because I'm kind of geeking out about it right now. But our nervous system is in this fight or flight place, in this sympathetic state. Everything feels urgent. Our bodies are tight. We're reactive. And the teen feels or hears, I'm being managed, not trusted. My job is to obey and avoid trouble. And depending on the personality of your child, it might not look quite like, they may not comply. They might actually rebel, right? They might be fighting you. Okay, so that leads us to the next mindset, which is protector. And this is a lose-win paradigm. So us as parents feel like we're losing, and the child feels like they're winning because they're getting their way. They're not actually winning. It's actually not good for them. But that's what it feels like. Okay. So the parent has low control. There's inconsistent expectations. It sounds like, fine, whatever. It's your education. We won't do math today. Or this week, or maybe this year, right? This is too hard. Let's just skip it. And I think that we can all, at least I can relate with going here, when you're the one carrying the weight all the time, when you're the one with that backpack on, and you're trying to be the enforcer, and we swing from one to the other, where we're like, okay, come on, you got to do this. And we're pushing and pushing, and then we're like, oh my word, fine, just have it your way. I'm exhausted. I can't do it anymore. Okay, under it, there is this burnout, this conflict avoidance. We're tired of the fight. Our nervous systems are shut down, numb, and we're in this avoidance state, this almost freeze state. And the teen learns, even unconsciously, that hard things are dangerous. I'm not really capable. So we avoid hard things. And if I get upset, things go away. They learn this pattern unconsciously. No one really expects much from me anyway. Okay, so you don't have to raise your hand, but I am guessing that all of us can relate with this. You know, thank you for being vulnerable and raising your hand. Me too.
Okay.
Because we're human, we're going to do this. We're going to go back and forth between these different states. The ideal mindset is what David Eager, Dr. Eager, calls the mentor mindset. And it is, the mentor mindset is something I have been passionate about for years, and have, anyway, I love learning about how to be a mentor and how to be a better mentor. And even though I know a lot in my head, it doesn't mean that that's my first reaction. I have to be really, really intentional about doing these things. So when you're considering how you're showing up in these roles, I don't want you to beat yourself up. I don't want you to, you know, belittle yourself in any way, shape, or form. I just want you to create awareness and just recognize that we all do these things, and then choose which mindset you want to show up in intentionally. Okay, so it's a win-win orientation. It is high expectations plus high respect plus support that matches those expectations. So that's the biggest thing. We're still requiring lots because we know what our children are capable of, but we have high respect for who they are and we want to hear what they think, and we are also right there to support them. And I want to just mention, these are all worldly scientific studies that have been done to, like, to back up this information that I'm sharing. But because this is a Christ-centered conference, I never want to miss an opportunity to testify of Jesus Christ. And I want you to think about how he is the perfect mentor. He and the atonement of Jesus Christ exemplifies this in every way. He knows who we can become, and he's not going to leave us where we are. He invites us to become like him, and that's not easy. That is soul-stretching work. But he also doesn't leave us alone. He has high respect for our agency and our choices, and he also has high support. The whole purpose of the atonement is to enable me, to give me power that I don't have by myself. So he's there, right with me. He's my advocate. Okay, the mentor mindset sounds like this. You can learn this with time and practice. Your choices matter, and learning from them is part of your path. Tell me more. I want to understand your view. This is hard, and you can do hard things. I'll walk with you. You are loved and valuable, independent of how school went today. So often when we are in the other mindset, we think our children are doing or not doing about our identity, and we're feeling inadequate or whatever. When we're in the mentor mindset, our nervous systems, I'll jump down there, are regulated. And we know who we are. We know who our children are. And it's coming from a place of trust. That is what's underlying the mentor mindset. We have a trust in God, but we also have a trust in our children's long-term growth. We know that just because they have a messy day or a messy week or a messy year, that doesn't have anything to do with their value, and it doesn't have anything to do with their potential. We have this trust, and our values are a foundation. We have confidence, we have peace, and we have love. We are proactive. We are intentionally doing things from a grounded place. We're grounded enough to be curious, firm, and kind. I can hold expectations. I have certain non-negotiables that are part of our family that are non-negotiable. And I also totally respect my child's autonomy and their ability to choose what is right for them. Okay, I want to just pause here for a second and tell you about a season when I didn't realize how much of the backpack was carrying. So my son's junior year, we'll call it junior year high school. I know that we don't really call it that necessarily in homeschool, but just for frame of reference. He was involved in some awesome classes at our Commonwealth. He had some great mentors outside of our Commonwealth. And technically, he was going through the motions of doing school. He was doing the checklist, getting things done, but he was not engaged. He was not fully owning his education. And I knew that, and I knew something was off. And there was some mentoring going on, but there was also some enforcing and also some protector going on, okay? I felt like, if I'm honest, it was me that was carrying the vision for his life. Like, I cared more about what he was going to become and who he was going to be than he did. I was the one more concerned about his assignments, especially his outside assignments, if he had them done and if he turned them in and where he was out on whatever. So it was me carrying all of that. I was the one that was worried about having the vision of who he could become, right? And there were parts of me that were trying to inspire him in that way, but on some level they were falling flat. I was carrying that backpack, and as long as I was carrying it, he didn't need to, because he was like, "Mom's worried enough for all of us. I don't even need to care. She's got this, right?" And I think probably as well-meaning mothers, we can fall into that quite easily. I'm going to come back to that story in a minute. We're actually going to. Oh, I forgot this part. I'm going to jump back. Sorry to give you whiplash here. This is with the mentor mindset. I want to make sure that we talk about this. The mentor mindset. The teen feels and hears, "I'm respected as a rising adult. My education matters, and so do my opinions. I'm expected to grow, and I'll be supported while I do. I have an important mission, and I can fulfill it." Okay. So these are the mindsets. And we're going to move on now to talk about the mentor mindset practices. So these are the things that, as parents, we can do to help create the environment, the soil, if you will, to help our children be willing to pick up the backpack. These are the habits that we do to help encourage that environment, if that makes sense. In a minute. So we're going to talk about these four, and then after that, I'm going to talk about strategic tools. And those strategic tools are more about helping them have the capacity to pick up the backpack. So we'll get to that in just a second. One of the things, so I mentioned that I have studied a lot about motivation, but motivation has always been studied, at least from the perspective that I read about it, it was always studied from an adult perspective. So Dr. Yeager decided to study it from the perspective of ages 10 to 25. And there were some nuances with his studies that were different than what was found in other scientific literature. So one of the things that he found is that youth between this age, ages 10 to 25, so pretty young kids clear up through when we fully develop our brains, they are highly, highly sensitive to whether or not someone respects them. So way more sensitive than us as adults. It's very important for them to feel respected, okay, which I thought was interesting. They're hypersensitive to that, okay? So all of these practices help support our youth in feeling respected, in supporting that, okay? So the first one is validate, don't dismiss. Now, I've heard sometimes people do not, like I've had conversations which are valid. People are like, "I don't even believe in the idea of validation. I'm not going to validate somebody when I don't agree with them. Like, that's ridiculous. I'm not going to be like, oh, yeah, totally." You know, what I want to say is validation is not the same as agreement. It is acknowledging the reality of somebody's experience. Because for them, whatever it is real for them. Okay, so it's not that, like our child says, "This is the stupidest curriculum ever." You're not supposed to be like, "Oh, yeah, it is the stupidest curriculum ever. Totally agree with you. Let's get rid of it. Let's burn it tonight." Whatever. Okay? What we're going to do is try to read between the lines and say something like, "Oh, it sounds like you're really frustrated. Like, something about this curriculum is not matching up with what you're wanting. Tell me more." Okay? So you're validating their frustration or how they're feeling. You're not agreeing with them. Okay. Yes?
Can I just add there's a couple word tool that has helped me a lot, just to say,
yes,
"I hear you." Because there
that.
Are times that, like, I'm flustered, and so the
yes.
words, "I hear that you're
yes.
feeling something," like, all I can do is, I can say, "I hear you."
Thank you.
Because it doesn't mean I agree, but I'm
yes.
hearing them. And
yes.
just, "I hear you" is good
I
for
love
them.
That.
They
that's the perfect script, and it's so easy. We can do that even if we are dysregulated and feeling like we're going to pull our hair out, right? We can say, "I hear you." Right? And I would, though, encourage you that if you are feeling that way, it's probably not the best time to be having a conversation, right? Calm yourself before you try to have these conversations. That's a topic for another day. Okay. I will say, though, that when you acknowledge how they're feeling, when you acknowledge the reality of their experience, it de-escalates their nervous system, okay? Their defenses go down. What happens when they are feeling defensive and frustrated is the sympathetic nervous system is activated. The amygdala is activated. I'll go down to this one. And their body is in full control, or their mind is not able to even process or think. Their prefrontal cortex, the thinking part of our brain, is not able to think when they are flustered. So when we validate them, it totally calms down their nervous system. So now we can meet and we can actually have a conversation. Okay, so validation is so powerful. Okay, number two is ask, don't command. This is such a powerful one, and I really have struggled with this over my life because it's so much faster to just give commands and tell our children what to do, right? Or we'll get to this in a minute, but they ask us a question and we just tell them the answer. That's way easier, right? My husband is so great at this. When our kids come to him and they ask him stuff, he knows the answer. And he's like, well, where would you go to figure that out? Or, well, what have you done in the past? Like, he exemplifies this in every way, and it's been so helpful to me to watch him. Again, it's one of those things that I have to intentionally think about to do because it doesn't come naturally to me, okay? So questions turn the teen's brain on, which is obvious, right? Commands signal a hierarchy where the teen has no power. And I would maybe say it a little differently than I said it on this slide. They just feel that you are one-upping them if you're telling them what to do. And it's unconscious. It's not like they're like, well, Mom thinks she's all that necessarily, right? But they know that on some level that you think they don't know very much, so they have to be told what to do, okay? Questions, on the other hand, signal a partnership because you are asking them what they think about something. You trust in their ability to use their brain by asking them the question. It hands the thinking back to the child. Number three is transparent reasons. So this is the third mentor mindset practice. Again, because youth, I'll call them youth, ages 10 to 25, are so sensitive to respect, they are always questioning your motives. If you are asking them to do something, they are going to read between the lines and wonder why. I think sometimes as homeschool moms, again, we inadvertently want, it makes us feel better when our children are doing their school or their learning and their or whatever, because it makes us feel like we're doing our jobs. And because a lot of times we feel a little bit inadequate, we unconsciously are seeking that validation, right? So if our children recognize that, you just want to control me because it makes you feel better. And they may not be able to articulate that, but they recognize it, okay? So you have to be really clear about your motives. You have to be really clear. No, actually, I can trust. I can be the mentor. I can trust and let go of a certain portion of this because I trust that you, as a child of God, want to grow inside you and you want to become. So when you're telling them, this is what I want you to do, and you tell them why, it needs to be honest. Like, I want this for you because this will bless you. This will bless your life. Okay? Does that make sense? Or is that great? Okay. So we're explaining the why. Okay, number four. We touched on this when I just mentioned just the mentor mindset in general. But a mentor mindset practice is that you have high standards plus high support. Okay, that is really important. You'll notice this picture that I have here of this dad with this young man crawling this climbing wall. We, as parents, wouldn't expect our child to just climb the wall without any of those handholds, okay? So as parents, we are there. You can see kind of the dad there. I don't know how helpful that is. This is what some AI, I don't remember what it was, I agree, has a stick in his bottom.
It's the rope. It's the rope.
That's you show us? Whoever helped me figure that out. You can tell I'm not a rock climber. That's so funny. Okay. Anyway. So let's get back on topic here. Anyway. So the carrot is. Yeah.
Can I just share? Like the belayer, he's holding the rope. If the kid falls, the belayer is in charge. Like that's a really important job. All they're doing is picking up the slack.
Yes.
The climber's in charge of everything.
They're doing the work.
But if the climber completely like messes up and falls, they're not going to hit the ground because the belayer has the rope. And it's not just in their hands. It's connected to a harness on them. So I think it just
goes along.
It's
a beautiful analogy
what
that I
doing.
Didn't even... I
the
did,
parents
that,
of
that
the belayer.
That it for me that I didn't recognize. Thank you for,
I
thank you for
too,
helping
I have to. Yes. I love what Rosie just said. I climbed things that I was not strong enough to climb, but yet I didn't want to give up and fall. And so I've had the belayer give a little pull and help lift part of my weight.
And that is exactly what this principle is. Okay, that's exactly what the atonement is to me. The atonement of Jesus Christ is he wants me to succeed. I'm the one doing the climbing because that's the only way I'll grow. But he's giving me the support I need so that I can. Okay, and that's what we want to try to do as parents.
I like the stick.
Me too. It's more efficient.
Thanks for your right?
This is so funny. Okay. Anyway, so this whole idea, according to Dr. Yeager, creates psychological safety. Okay? It's them knowing, I am capable. I can do this. And you sharing that vision with them, and also knowing I'm not alone. I have whatever support I need to get there. Okay? Mom and Dad are right there. I'm the one doing the climbing, but they're right there. They have my back, and they will support me. Okay? And I also think it takes us being close to God and the Spirit to know what this looks like, what support we need to be given, so that we're not taking over the backpack. That whole figuring out what's ours versus theirs, I feel like can only be done with the Spirit. Okay. All right. Oh yes.
And just a comment on that I found with my children too is they tend to be very vocal about how I can help and how I can butt out.
Yes. Well, that's that's
and
awesome that they will communicate.
I found it very helpful to listen and take heavy consideration into what they're telling me, and it's created a system that for us works.
That's awesome.
So our particular system probably wouldn't work for everybody, but it works well for us.
I really appreciate you sharing that. What I hear you saying is that there is open communication and open and respect for each other, it sounds like. Like they feel comfortable. For them to be willing to be honest with you, I think shows that they trust you, and for you to listen, that's why they trust you, because they feel respected. So thank you for giving us that example. I appreciate it. Okay, we're going to move on now to the strategic tools. So the practices that we just talked about are what we as mentors do to help them be willing to pick up the backpack, to take ownership of their education. The tools are trying to help them grow the capacity. They're more like the support that we are trying to give them to help grow their capacity. Okay. And some of these, there's some crossover with the practices. So hopefully I don't lose you. Anyway, I tried to make it as simplified as possible. So let me know if I lose you. I'll try to clarify. Okay. So wise feedback. Again, this is we're communicating high standards plus assurance of capacity, of capability. So when David Yeager was doing studies to figure out what motivates youth, one of the things that they found, they just did this, it was a really simple thing, and they did it in several different instances, but they would have students turn in papers, and the teacher, the professor, whatever, would sit on there and critique all the things for the child, like what they were doing wrong or whatever, and they would hand it back, and then figured out how many of those papers came back in, how many of those students took the feedback and actually did something with it. And it was far less than if they would say something like this. I'm holding you to this high standard because I have a very high opinion of what you can do, and I know you can reach it. And that would be the only difference. So they would give all the critiques, but then they would say something to this effect. And because of that, they had a huge increase of how many of the students would turn their papers back in. So this principal is kind of like a goldsmith. A goldsmith wouldn't throw just any regular rock into the heat to purify it because it wouldn't. It's not going to matter to any ordinary rock. But they take a piece with of gold and they try to and they put that in the fire and refine that. They do that because that rock is worth a lot. And so that refiner's fire, that whole process is worth going through because this has the capacity for so much more. So you're communicating that to your child. I will mention, he doesn't talk about this in the book, but in the other literature that I read about motivation, it is really important for our students to feel a level of competency. So if we pile on all the things that we want them to change right up front, that usually shuts them down. So it's really important for us to have spiritual eyes and help them take the next right step for them. And I believe that that's what our Heavenly Father does. It's line upon line, precept upon precept, and He helps us take the next right step in our growth. It's kind of the Goldilocks principle. You're pushing them, but not too much. Okay? Yes?
How do you help them share that without comparing to others? And my example or my problem is, so like, this is the standard for this child. Uh-huh. Like, this is the standard for this child. But right. This child says, you're not holding them to the same standard, so yeah. I shouldn't try. And they're hitting this level.
Yes.
And so it's like, how do you explain yeah. that your potential is for you, not yes. for them?
Just like that.
I'll try.
It can be hard. I have had similar issues in my family, but you... It is. It's just this explaining. What is right for you is not right for this child. And God sees us all as individuals, too. We are used to the mindset of a public school where everybody in ninth grade should be doing whatever. But that's not how we're wired as human beings, and that's not how God sees us. Okay, so it's a little bit hard to overcome that cultural thinking, but just keep communicating. Okay, I hope that's okay. All right. This next tool has to do with that ask piece, which was one of the practices, okay? So this is how you ask. You're trying to encourage your children to exercise their agency and engage their brains by asking questions, and this is how, these are the types of questions you can ask, okay? So when they are stuck, when they don't know what to do, when they're not motivated, whatever, you can ask these types of questions. The first one, the where question. Where exactly are you stuck? You're isolating the problem. I think it was it Einstein? I get the scientists mixed up sometimes. Anyway, one of them said something along the lines of, like naming the problem is half the solution. Something like that. Okay, the next one, the past question. What worked the last time a lesson felt this heavy? So you're going to look for something from their past where maybe they overcame something hard, and you're going to invite them to apply it to the circumstance that they're in now. And then number three, the resource question. What's one tool or person we could check with to get them unstuck? So you're trying to invite them to learn how to learn, basically, and what resources are available, and to not always come to you for all the answers. Okay, number three. I gotta go fast. Stress optimization. I think most of us have been taught that stress is bad for our health. There is a doctor called Kelly McGonigal. She has a TED Talk and a book that I highly recommend. But she talks about how the way we think about stress controls what it does to our bodies. So if we think that stress is harmful, our blood vessels constrict. If we think that stress is actually a challenge and it's preparing our body to do something hard, then our blood vessels actually dilate. Okay, so this is a script that you can use to reframe stress when your children are struggling and they're like, this is too hard, I'm feeling anxiety, something is wrong, right? Help them to see that their pounding heart is providing you with more energy. That faster breathing is getting more oxygen to your brain. Your body is helping you rise to this challenge. And if you want to know more about that, totally check out Kelly McGonigal's TED Talk.
Okay.
Yes.
Well, and Adam shared yesterday that, like, long-term, stress for long-term is not good for us. Stress for short bits, 1 or 2 hours, is actually really good and healthy.
Yes.
And we want them to have the short burst through explaining what, you know, maybe what it's doing.
And
that's good.
Yeah, that's not something I have taken the time to go into, but yes, we need to complete the stress cycle. Our bodies are made to be under high amounts of stress, but then to recover. So if we're under high stress, and we're never recovering, that is not good for our bodies. So that's another nervous system thing that I can talk a whole lot about, but we need to be coming up and down and finding those micro moments to come down from stress and complete the stress cycle so that we can recover and be resilient. So that's an excellent point. I didn't hear him, but he's right on. Okay, self-transcendent purpose. This is like the guy who is chipping away at the block here, squaring it off, but it's just tedious work that he's gritting his teeth and working through, versus this happy guy, which I'm sure he's happy at every moment, just kidding, but he's there and he sees that he's helping to build a cathedral. So he has a totally different experience with this. It is helping our children recognize that their education has a purpose. So in a nutshell, it is asking our children, how could this skill help someone or solve a problem that you care about someday? Okay, and I could say a whole lot more about that, but I'm going to try to get through these pretty quick. The other thing that's really important is to normalize adversity. I know for me, my children have said things sometimes like, well, that's just easy for them, or you're already good at that, or whatever. They don't recognize that for people to become masters at certain things, they have drawn 150 sketches that they threw in the garbage before they got the masterpiece. They don't see all of that work. So normalizing adversity, helping them understand that challenge and difficulty are all part of the process, sharing your own processes, sharing stories from other people who have gone through difficult things and achieved greatness is also really important. Okay, so we'll jump to this last part here. So we have all of these practices and these tools, but if you are using them, then obviously you're still the one carrying the backpack, right? So we're hoping for integration. We are hoping that our child will pick up the backpack. And one of the things that Dr. Yeager talks about in his book is the saying is believing principle. So you teach them all of these things. So what is your name again? Amy Ann?
Yes.
Okay, Amy Ann. You talked about how, you know, you're having this struggle in your home, and you're teaching them these principles. And the message here is that you want your children to teach the principles that you've been teaching to someone else. So you're looking for opportunities for them to implement the principle to somebody else. So maybe this child has a younger sibling that's stressed out about trying out for a play or whatever. So you're like, okay, they're really stressed out. Will you go teach them about what you know about stress? And in the process of teaching that child, they're convincing themselves and it becomes theirs. The second thing is you ask their advice. When you have an issue in your own life, you go to them when you think it's appropriate and you ask, well, what do you think I should do here? And you give them an opportunity to teach you. So they are implementing, again, they're integrating what you're sharing. And then, again, have them connect it to their own life. So I started off with a story today, and I decided not to share a piece of it in the middle because we're running out of time. So I'll try to share here and wrap up because I think it's an important part of this. So my son, his senior year, he had this amazing opportunity to do a private school with this amazing mentor, and they would be doing all this traveling and whatever. And I was super excited about it. I felt super good. I approached my son with it. And to be honest, he was disengaged. So he was just like, yeah, sure. Sounds fine. I could tell he wasn't like totally bought into it, but he agreed to it. And I was like, I don't know how to help him engage in care. And I did encourage him. Like, I was like, well, there's all these other options. I want you to like really consider what you want. But the truth is he just didn't want to engage. And he agreed to that. So we signed him up. And he went to the private school. And after about 6 weeks, he recognized, I hate this. This is not what I want at all. So what felt like a failure, it really did feel like a failure on some level, because I really wanted him to do this private school. I wasn't trying to be the enforcer. I was trying to sneakily be the enforcer. I thought this would be great for his life, and I hoped that he would love it and eventually have buy-in. Anyway, he came to us after about 6 weeks, and he said, I want to quit. I hate this. And I'm like thinking, what? No, you can't quit this. Like, I don't want you to quit this. I want you to do this. And I wanted to be like, you're making a big mistake, you know, whatever. And so I tried to just hold back. And I knew that if I stepped in and said, no, you will do this, I would be the one carrying the backpack, right? I know these principles. It's hard for me to implement them, like I said. So I said, okay, that's fine. You can drop the private school. But you need to have a contingency plan. And he, knowing his dad and I well, already have one. but he came to us and he told us everything that he wanted. He outlined it for us. And he tried to convince us why this was the thing. And in his convincing, in that saying is believing, he convinced himself. And suddenly, he picked up the backpack and say, I want to say this. This whole thing is never a straight line, right? It is handing over a piece of the backpack a little bit at a time. And sometimes it's them dropping the backpack completely or going to a school that they hate for 6 weeks before they get woken up and they realize what it is they want, okay? So he, with counsel from us and with support from us, he found several mentors that were right in alignment with what he wanted. He's an entrepreneur, and he cares about business, and he found all of these amazing mentors. He created a book group, and they read all of these cool books. And he did so many amazing things his senior year. And it was because he took ownership, and he cared. And I have to be honest, it wasn't my first preference of what I probably would have chosen for him, but it was absolutely the very best choice for him. And when he left on his mission, I didn't have to worry like I was worried the year before when he was talking about going on a mission. And I was like, I don't know. I don't know if you can do it. Like, honestly, like this. Anyway, but that last year, there was a huge transformation in him. And he was taking ownership. I knew that he had enough resiliency and enough strength to pick up that backpack himself and to find the tools and the support that he needed when he needed support, because we all do, right? So as we wrap up today, I think our time is gone. I just want to encourage you. There's a ton of information here and a whole bunch more I could have shared. I tried to distill it down. But I want you to just pick one of the practices, one of the tools to consider implementing, trying to take on more of that mentor mindset intentionally, trying to follow the example of our Savior Jesus Christ. And I promise you that it will be messy, but it is where the growth happens, and it's where our children reach their full potential. And I believe in all of you. I know that so often, because I felt this way all the time, we feel inadequate and we wonder if we're doing what we need to do with our children. But as you keep trying, and you keep trying to follow the Spirit and implementing the principles that you're hearing in this conference, it's going to work. I just applaud all of you for your great efforts and the fact that you have chosen to take the less traveled road and chosen to, or consider, you know, some of you I know haven't chosen all in, but you're considering homeschooling, because it will bless you and it will bless your children. even though it would be messy. So that's all I have for you today.